This week on Writers, Inc.
The deeper, the darker, you know, the heavier the topic, the more fantastical the setting, at least as far as my stories go.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories, all have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, I'm Christine Daigle.
J.P. Reinplush.
I'm Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. So before we get going, we've got a very big, special, incredible announcement. I don't know if it's really that big or special. We are doing a live episode. We've never actually tried this before, but February 5th at 1 p.m., we're going to try and do a live show. 1 p.m. Eastern for those of you in Manila. We've got no clue how this is going to work. There's going to be a link starting in today's show notes that you can click to join. It's a Zoom call. And it's probably going to go horribly wrong, but we're going to give it a try.
Yeah.
Tune in just for that, if nothing else.
Yeah. Absolutely. Who doesn't like a train wreck?
Yeah. My lovely service can accommodate 100 people. So the first 100 people, you're in. Come chat with us. That'll be great.
Or log in from multiple computers. I'm going to log in like 4 or 5 different times.
Perfect. Yeah.
we're going to get those numbers, but you should be able to ask questions in the in the comments of the thing. So we'll take your questions live.
Yes.
So
I'm going to make that happen somehow. So I'll figure it out.
It'll be fun.
Kevin, you've got snow coming your way in Texas, right?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I don't know if it's probably going to be snow, but they're talking about like just icy rain is what they keep calling it. So they may not understand what snow is, or it may be something entirely different.
Texas doesn't.
We don't get that. Yeah, we mm-hmm. don't get the last few times we've gotten something like this in Texas, it shut down the entire state, like knocked out our power grid. There is no traffic during those times because nobody knows how to drive in rain, much less ice and snow. So, yeah, the North always makes fun of us, but it's like, why would we need infrastructure for that sort of thing?
Well, I think I'm like a couple hours away from the exploding tree risk, so that one's fun.
Oh,
exploding tree, what is that?
Yes, it gets so cold then the sap can't handle it, expands and it explodes the tree.
Oh, what's nice. The temperature for that? It's going to be 5 here on Saturday.
It's like in the minus 50 Fahrenheit range.
Minus 50 Fahrenheit? Is that even a thing?
Wow.
Yes, yes. I've actually had to go outside minus 50 before, which was really fun.
I didn't know you lived in Antarctica.
Basically,
I was about to say, do you live in deep space? Where do you live?
You all think that I live over by like the Wisconsin area. I truly live in Antarctica. Yeah,
are you more northern than I am?
I think where I live, I'm pretty much on par where you are.
Okay,
but
so we're like the same.
I have to travel, or used to travel for the day job farther north, and that's where I got trapped in the minus 54.
I see.
Yeah.
I'd like to know why like the Apple weather app can't get this right, because like every time I open it, like we're getting snow on Sunday and Monday. Every time I open it, every hour it's different. It'll say 15 inches, and I'll look at it an hour later, and it's like 0.8 inches. It never seems to know. And then like I'll look outside and it's snowing and like my phone will say snow starting in 2 hours. It's never right. It's okay with rain, but it can't get snow.
I think that's because there is no funding for meteorology, but that is another podcast. So
that would be correct.
they're spending it all picking up the trees that exploded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Floating tree cleanup crew.
On the flip side, now we know where toothpicks come from.
There you go.
Yes, there you go.
Wherever the hell JP lives.
Are there videos of this, like a tree actually like exploding? Does it?
I want to know about fatalities.
Does it explode or just fall apart? Or like, I need a YouTube video.
I saw it as like a joke on TikTok, but it actually, it looks like it is a real thing. I mean, especially when you talk about the sap freezing. I think truly what happens is the tree splits, cracks, and falls, and it's considered an exploding tree. It's not like
so. when I see a video of somebody like going outside with a bucket of water and throwing it up in the air and like it's ice before it hits the ground, like that's your neighbor.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Okay.
Or like the t-shirt where it just like turns solid really quick.
Yeah, yay, global warming.
Yay.
Kevin, what is in the news?
All right. Well, introducing the Substack TV app now in beta. Substack has launched a TV app for Apple TV and Google TV, bringing long-form videos and live streams from Substack creators directly to the living room. Creators don't need to do anything new. Existing video posts automatically appear in the TV app for signed-in subscribers with access based on current free or paid subscription status. At launch, viewers can watch subscribed videos and live streams, browse a personalized quote for you feed, and explore individual creator pages. More features are coming, including audio posts, search and discovery tools, paid content previews, in-app subscription upgrades, and better show organization, and also more of Kevin.
Yeah. You gonna use that, Kevin? I guess
Oh
there's nothing
yeah.
you have to do. You'll just appear.
Every
Yeah.
damn thing you just heard me talk about.
Do
That's
you
a
live
new
stream in the
Kevin
app?
feature.
Do you
Yeah.
live stream
Not
in the
yet.
app?
I haven't actually done that yet. And I actually kind of have a standing date with another Substacker that we're going to do a live stream now that you can do it from the desktop browser. But we've had events, we'll say, happening in our lives that have prevented us from testing that out. But
Yeah. Do you do videos in that app? Or you just do posts?
I haven't. I've been using because I keep doing everything on YouTube.
Yeah.
But maybe I think it's time for me to
And
because
put some
I've
over
tr
there too.
yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
because I actually make money on Substack where I make nothing on YouTube. So
This is probably a much less crowded field too, right? Because like
yeah, I'd
everybody's on
imagine.
YouTube. Not I don't know anybody doing video on Substack.
I think you're going to see an explosion of it though once this becomes something that is accessible via these apps because that's kind of the. That's one of the barriers to entry. 'Cause like I can watch YouTube on, my Fire TV, for example. And that's what I do every evening. That's 99% of what I watch. Well, if I can start finding people who are creating actual like interesting content on Substack, and there's tons of them doing it in writing, well, I think that may shift me over. So this is a game changer.
Well, you know who's doing video is James Patterson, does his podcast
Yeah.
on Substack. So maybe we should put Writer's Ink on Substack. I don't know.
Well, I host the Wordslinger podcast on Substack, but all the video stuff I've been doing on YouTube, maybe I'm just wasting my time. Maybe I should just.
I think we're already on Substack. I
There we
gotta check with
go.
Alex.
Are we?
Things
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't
I'm
know.
pretty sure
We
we're
are.
somewhere.
Alex is magic. He puts us everywhere. I don't
I
know what he does.
yeah, I mean I know I created an account for us when Substack first came out, and I'm pretty sure that Alex was is sharing videos on their end on YouTube, but
Nice.
I could be wrong.
I should take a more of a hand in some of our content, I think. At least on Substack. I should start doing stuff.
You go.
As if I needed more stuff to do. 50,000-pound reader-led writing prize launched. A new 50,000-pound Libraro Prize has launched in partnership with Hachette UK, designed to let readers, not editors, create the shortlist, positioning the award as, quote, reader-led alternative to traditional gatekeeping and publishing. Writers upload full manuscripts to the Libraro platform, where readers champion entries to form a shortlist of six, with readers themselves eligible for £10,000 prizes for referrals and active participation. The overall winner receives £30,000 plus £20,000 in marketing support and a publishing deal with Hachette UK, with judging from the reader selected shortlist. The prize is open globally to adult and crossover YA fiction with submissions due by February 15th.
This is an interesting approach. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm guessing they're just taking money they would have normally handed over as an advance and using it towards
Yeah.
this, so it all kind of works itself out.
Yeah, and it's more reader led.
I think it's interesting that readers can make 10,000 pounds on prizes. I don't know how
Yeah.
that's distributed, but
It's the
that's kind
perfect
of
place
neat.
for my new YA novel, JP and the Exploding Tree.
Perfect. Great. Find a toothpick.
All right. Final story. Spotify is quietly developing a game-changing feature for book lovers. Spotify is developing, quote, Page Match, a feature that syncs physical books, ebooks, and audiobooks by letting users scan a printed page with their phone to jump to the exact spot in the audiobook, and vice versa, using OCR to match text to audio timestamps. It directly challenges Amazon's Whisper Sync advantage, but extends it beyond Kindle by working with physical books, positioning Spotify as a more format-agnostic reading and listening platform. This is freaking genius.
It's cool.
Agreed.
It is pretty smart. Nobody's tried it yet, though, right? Like, I'm just curious how well it actually
Nobody I've
works.
heard of.
No. Yeah, they're just developing it. So I don't think they've launched it yet. I don't know if it's in beta testing or whatever, but.
Are any of you using WhisperSync on Kindle?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's problematic at best, man. Like
Yeah.
I will be listening to an audiobook, switch over and read the thing in on Kindle. Usually I have to go find the place where it left off in audio. And then when I read in Kindle, for some reason it triggers the audio to jump back like three chapters. This could just be me. I admit that, I may be attracting this particular glitch. It may not be a common one, but I don't like WhisperSync.
I've had a ton of problems like that, and I think part of it is coming from CarPlay because I listen to audiobooks in the car, but that never seems to sync up to the right spot, like not even with podcasts. But this could be very cool if this actually works.
Definitely. What I need is asleep earphones or headbands that sense when I fall asleep, so they can shut my audiobook
So
off so it doesn't play for
supposedly,
5 hours and then I don't know where I am.
now I have not tried this, but that is actually a feature of AirPods Pro 3.
Really? I have those. I don't know if I could fall asleep with those in my ear though. That's the only problem. They're
You
not
need
very
like the over the
comfortable.
head ones.
Yeah, you
Yeah,
need
I
the
have
other ones.
them.
Do they call them something different? They have Apple's.
Notebook.
I
I
have
don't
a
know if
sleep
they sense
headband
that
and
or
it's
not.
amazing, but I fall asleep wearing it, so.
So
Did
the
you know?
AirPods 3 will you can actually get your pulse. It'll do your heart rate.
Cool.
So I use that when I'm out doing my walk. I'll check my heart
Better
rate, see
not
how
to
it's
know.
going. Yeah.
In terms of health,
Did you know you could still absorb the text if you listen to it while you're sleeping?
that's a lie because I don't know where I am when I wake up. I'm like, what are they talking
Nobody said
about?
you could follow
Oh
the
man, I
text. They
don't
said you could
remember.
absorb
Just
it.
absorb it.
It's in my subconscious somewhere.
I got through college doing that. I used to get my textbooks in audio, and I would listen to them while I was sleeping. I had a little speaker underneath my pillow, and
That's
I would just
cool.
play them. Like I wouldn't actually study the books; I would just play the audios.
I didn't study books either.
I learn everything by osmosis. What I do is I take the book, I put it under my head instead of a pillow, and I wake up knowing everything is in the book.
I had
Great.
an insane rote memory, so I would never open a textbook and just be like, you said this in class and write it on the exam. That only
Yeah.
worked until second year college. Then I had to study. But
I
high
got
school was
all the way
easy.
through my graduate school by doing that. I didn't crack a textbook from the time, I think from probably
Oh.
around 7th grade until I graduated with my graduate degree.
Yeah, I didn't, but you know, my high school physics class I needed to study. That was no joke.
Physics is easy. You live
Anyway.
in a world of physics. How do you not know how this stuff works?
Well, can't, how come physics I can't do a pull-up? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, it's called gravity.
Practice.
All right.
All right. I'm going to the moon for my pull-ups.
You know that manuscript you've been editing for the past year? The one that's almost done, but never quite gets there? Well, right now, it's crying out for help from this episode's sponsor, AutoCrit. Quite possibly the most powerful all-in-one writing platform, AutoCrit puts an entire publishing team in the palm of your hand. Get access to customizable automated alpha and beta readers, plus series-wide story analysis, marketing support, line editing tools that can help you catch the mistakes you miss, and even more, including exclusive craft events only for members. The value is insane, and right now you can grab lifetime access for just one payment. No monthly fees, no usage limits, no caps, no tokens. At AutoCrit, unlimited means unlimited. It's time to finish your book. Start making real progress, escape revision limbo, and publish with confidence story after story. Check out autocrit.com/JD to save 50% on lifetime membership right now. That's autocrit.com/JD.
JD, Who is up this week?
This week we've got Samantha Sotoyombo on. Samantha is a professional daydreamer, aspiring time traveler, and speculative fiction writer based in Manila. She's going to tell us all about her latest novel, which is called The Elsewhere Express and just released January 20th.
Sam, you have called yourself a professional daydreamer and an aspiring time traveler based in Manila. So
Yes, exactly.
I am very curious, when was the moment you recognized that daydreaming could be a job description that you could build a career on?
Okay, well, I also call myself an accidental writer because I'm not a writer by training.
Okay.
So it was really out of necessity that I fell into writing because, well, I have Manila traffic to thank for that. I was driving my son to school at that time, and Manila traffic just made it impossible for me to like head on home again. So I decided to park myself at the Starbucks across from his school, and they were charging for Wi-Fi, and I said, "No way. I mean, I already
Why?
paying for this overpriced coffee, right?
Yeah.
So there's no way I was going to pay for Wi-Fi." So I said, "Okay, what can I do that's free?" So I decided, okay, let's try and write a book
Yeah.
to entertain myself. And so that's what I did. So, I had never written any form of fiction before. My background was in marketing. Like I had worked in companies like Unilever and Johnson & Johnson for 10 years before I became a full-time mom. And so it was really just for fun.
Yeah.
And at the end of that school year, I had a book, which became my debut novel, Before Ever After, which I always call my Doctor Who fan fiction. That's where the time traveling, I guess, comes in. So, and then at the end of that school year, I told my husband, "Okay, look, I have a book." And he says, "Okay, so now what are you going to do with it?" I go, "I don't know." And then I don't know. I believe signs from the universe because I walked into this discount bookstore, and there, lo and behold, was this copy of Publishing for Dummies. And I just, I decided to snatch it up, and that's where I discovered the whole process about how to get your book traditionally published. And this was back in the day, because like my first book came out 14 years ago, right? So when I was querying, this was the point where agents were still asking for actual copies, printed out. Printed. There was no query manager or things like that. So I would have to like send this over to New York, like from Manila. So this cost me an arm and a leg. Yeah. So I mean, luckily the book sold. So I got a return on my investment. But yeah. So that's the long answer to your short question about how I discovered, how daydreaming could pay off. So really because of necessity, I was just, too cheap to pay for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. And like, so that's wild to me. And you said for a long time that you didn't really view yourself as a real writer, that you were just that mom who wrote a book.
Right.
So like, when did that identity change, or do you still see yourself that way?
Oh gosh, imposter syndrome is so very, very real.
It is.
So, I mean, I think the fact that it's still very hard to commit to the idea that this is a full-time thing, because I think publishing is one of those industries where so many things are just out of your hands. I don't know how long this ride will last. I mean, I definitely had a lot of lows in this roller coaster ride, and I really don't know how long I can keep going. So I really have a hard time like owning it and saying, "Oh yes, I am a full-time author." Yeah, but for how long,
Fair. Well, for
I
14 years at least.
don't know. 14 years at least.
Excellent. No, that's really fascinating. And yeah, imposter syndrome is such a monster, to say the least.
For sure, for sure.
And I'm really fascinated by the carving out time working at Starbucks, and just trying to figure that part out. So what did that process teach you about like discipline and permission that you
Right.
still rely on now?
Well, I think I learned a lot about discipline actually from my corporate career because, when you're in corporate, you just have to show up for work, right? You're not waiting for inspiration to show up. You just go to work, right? And that's how I approach writing. I think of it as a work day. I show up even if inspiration doesn't decide to show up and come with me to work that day. I mean, that's what the delete button is for, right? I
Yeah.
always think it's fine. The words don't have to be pretty. That's what like books, great. Somebody said, I can't remember who, but somebody said like books aren't written, they're rewritten. And I really, that gives me a lot of grace, gives me permission to write really crappy first draft. So, because I know, like, yeah, this is not the time to make it pretty. And all I have to do is really just show up,
Yeah.
show up, even if inspiration decides to ditch me that day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. And so with I think it was for Love and Gravity, you deliberately picked a romantic lead that was the least likely romantic lead, Isaac Newton, and then researched him obsessively.
Oh, yes.
Until he became a
Yes,
human on the page.
exactly.
So I'm curious, with the Elsewhere Express, what was that equivalent of, like, is this too weird? Is this too hard? Or that sort of challenge there.
I think that's always a question in my books. It's like, is this too weird? I think with Elsewhere Express, well, the idea first came about because I was on a train in Tokyo and I noticed that, I was looking around the train and I just noticed that despite the train being full, it was actually empty in the sense that everybody, their minds seemed to be elsewhere. They were looking at their phones or just staring out into space. And that made me think, like, oh, okay. So if their thoughts aren't with them at this moment, where do thoughts go?
Yeah.
And that made me think, aha, what if thoughts board a literal train of thought?
Yeah.
Which of course led me down this path to thinking, okay, so what if our thoughts wander too far? Would we get lost? Like, would we be able to find our way back to our seats on the subway or the metro? Again, that made me think, okay, why do we return to these seats? What anchors us to this reality? And I said, what has weight? And I thought, oh, purpose. Purpose has weight. So people who don't have purpose, they're the ones who go off on this train. And I said, okay, let's pitch this and see if my editors and my agents understand the weird things that pop out from my head. So yeah, I think for me it's always that because all my books start with the question, what if?
Yeah.
And I think if you follow that question, it'll always lead you to something, well, either really interesting or really crazy. So
Yeah.
it's always a risk.
Yeah. And I think too, like, this book comes off as like a cozy adventure, but it still carries that grief and that trauma in it, which I love. I love those kinds of stories. So I'm curious about your take on the intersection of like cozy storytelling
Right.
intermixed with this like grief processing and trauma.
I think the more, like, I think the deeper the topic that you want to cover, it's almost as if you want the background to be more magical and more fantastical so that you keep the reader looking in that direction. Because if it was dark all the way through, these are topics that you don't necessarily want to, dwell on. But
Yeah.
I figured that if you have some magic in the background, it'll hold your attention and you keep on looking in that direction. So that's my thinking there. It's like the deeper, the darker, the heavier the topic, more fantastical the setting, at least as far as my stories go.
Yeah.
So it's like la la la, look at me.
Yeah. It's sort of like the cozy gives the hope to the reader that things will be
Exactly.
okay.
Yeah,
Yeah. I
exactly.
love that. And so I saw too, several reviewers mentioned that the Elsewhere Express, it feels beautiful. It's disorienting sometimes, and it's a lot like a vivid dream. So as a craft choice of yours, how did you decide where to let the story stay in that like dreamlike strange, and when to step in and clarify rules to the reader?
Okay, this will sound strange because I always find it surprising when people say that my writing sounds like a dream because for me it doesn't, I guess, because for me that's just how it is. I perceive it that way, and I'm just writing things as they come to me. I saw even the like somebody said it was like writing on acid, or you'd have to be on acid to be able to read this. And that made me worry, like, oh, I guess my brain is a bit strange, because like for me, I feel it's like, yeah, of course a train of thought makes sense. Like, of course a bridge on this train would be made of grudges, because that would be the most, sturdy kind of material. Like, yeah, that makes sense to me. So I didn't purposely or intentionally set out to write something that was dreamlike. It's just what comes naturally to me.
And lean into it, right? That's the goal. No, I love that. Okay. And then I'm curious about your writing process in regards to the Elsewhere Express, because I think I saw Before Ever After was without an outline. You sort of winged it. Love and Gravity had more of that structured process because there was that time travel piece. So where
Correct.
does the Elsewhere Express sit on that spectrum?
Okay, I've since learned that outlining is good to a certain extent. Only because it helps you manage the anxiety of not being able to finish the book, At least I know that, okay, it has a beginning, middle, and end. Particularly the end. At least I have to at least have a few options there for me to aim for. But my outlines by no means are, they're not very detailed. Sometimes they'll look like a word or a bullet point. Yeah, just like little guides for me and little, I would call them reassurances that, yeah, okay, this is enough to make a story. Like, this story is headed somewhere. And so I guess that's how I wrote Water Moon, and that's how I wrote the Elsewhere Express as well. So somewhere in between what I did for Before Ever After, where literally there was no outline, and then where Love and Gravity was like really intensely outlined. So somewhere in between, I feel that's my sweet spot. That's where I manage my anxiety, but at the same time, I still, experience the book as the reader does, discovering things along the way.
I love that. That's a very good and I think healthy way of approaching writing. So in terms of research, especially when digging into like the grief science or psychology, what did that look like for Elsewhere Express? Was it a lot of intuitive, or were you doing some types of research for that?
I think mainly the research for the Elsewhere Express were the technical parts of the train, which might be surprising considering that, well, when people read the book, they'll see that it's not really a train, in the way that we understand trains. But I still needed to have some understanding of like how train cars are connected, how the engine works, things like that. But other than that, everything else I would say was a bit intuitive. I think, like anyone else, I have experienced grief. I've experienced these, maybe not as intensely as the characters have, but to some extent, I've experienced all the emotions that I've kept or I've tried to capture in the book. So that one, I relied on my own personal experience. I think that's the one great thing about getting older. When you get to be like, because I'm 52, right? So I feel like, yeah, okay, I do have some perspective that I can share. I think I wrote this, and I feel that even with Water Moon, I'm writing more and more for my kids. They're both like in their early 20s now. Like my daughter's, in college. My son's just graduated from college. So I feel like the things that I want to say to them that may not necessarily, feel as comfortable sharing in a normal day-to-day setting, like, oh, let's sit down and have a conversation about grief and purpose, I feel that I can channel it and into a story and for them to discover one day when they're ready to, pick up one of my books. But in all honesty, like, oh my gosh, I literally have to bribe them to read my things.
But
I
they're
go,
there for
I
them.
might, like, I might be your favorite author, and you just don't know it.
Love that. I do want to circle back to the conversation about the reviews when you had said that you read that one review that they claimed it felt like an acid trip. And I think too, like you lean into the professional daydreamer side of things. So you have a writing style that I feel like you lean into. So writers that are listening to this and they may be getting that tough feedback, what are the like critiques you absorb, and which ones do you sort of ignore and outgrow in your process when you get that feedback?
Okay. So while I always say that reviews are for readers, I mean, among us writers,
Definitely read
we
mine.
do take a peek, right? I mean,
Oh,
we
yeah.
do take a peek. Let's just be honest. Like, we do take a peek. And for me, I feel like I'm not really affected by negative reviews because, I mean, that's their opinion, right? Everybody's into, I mean, I don't love everything I read either.
Right.
And it's fine. I don't have a personal vendetta against a book that I don't like, or you know, and I'm entitled to my opinion too. So I feel like I've learned to separate myself from my work. Like, I put a lot of myself in my books, but my books aren't me, you know? So any opinion a person has about my books, they're entitled to that.
Yeah.
And if I see something constructive that I can pick up and put back in my work, I will. But as far as it affecting my day, no, it's not going to affect my day because they don't even know me, right? They don't know me. They know this work and that they have an opinion about it, then it's fine. What I do find reviews useful for is, like, for example, if I'm trying to get into the mood for writing or like psyching myself up, you know, psyching myself so that I don't have imposter syndrome for that day, then I'm going to read a few 5-star reviews. So thank God for filters.
Yep.
So I'll read a few 5-star reviews and like, yes, I can do this, right? But it's always good to balance it out because you're never going to be as good as a fi as what this 5-star review says you are. Like, let's be honest, you know, you're not that great, but you're not as terrible also as a 1-star review. And the interesting thing about it, some people will love your book for the same reason,
Yep.
exact same reason that somebody will hate your book, right? Some people may love acid trips and some people may hate acid trips, and that's
Yeah.
perfectly fine, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, don't take it personally. Every review, I think that you get, it's just a way for you to find your readers, right? You won't find your readers if you don't put your work out there. And the more, of course, that you put your work out there, the more people will read it, and you will just get amongst that, you know, that group of people who discover you. There will always be someone who will not like your work, and there'll also be people who like your work. So it's all that part. It's all a part of finding your readers, I feel, you know? So you can't be affected by it that way.
Yeah. I recall this one time I got a 1-star and a 5-star review 10 minutes apart from each other that said the same thing. And I was like, oh,
Exactly.
an
Exactly.
interesting
It's like
moment.
you can't
Yeah.
write for your haters. And at
Yep.
the same time, you can't believe also all your 5-star reviews, you know? Otherwise, where's the growth, right? You
Yeah.
always have to keep striving.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, so you've said that the goal of writing shouldn't be to get published, that the goal to write is write a good story and let publishing be the effect, not the cause. So if you were talking to a writer who is trying to get their first book deal, might be stuck on draft two, what would you want to shake loose for them so that they can focus more on the story?
Oh gosh, I would just say, like, I feel like every writer starts writing for the joy of it, but that's something that we lose along the way sometimes because we get so obsessed with the idea of getting published, right? But that's not why we started out writing this story. We started out because this story came to us, chose us as its, you know, as its writer. We were blessed with this idea, and I feel that we just need to remind ourselves that every idea, every story is a gift, and we need to honor that gift, right? So even if that gift is just for ourselves, you know, I think the most important reader of your book is yourself. So if you try to just remember that, okay, this idea chose me, like no, it didn't go to someone else, then I have to be show my gratitude for receiving this idea by focusing on the idea and not all the other things that come later. I feel like a good story will always find its audience, you know, and it may not necessarily be a big audience, and that's perfectly fine. As long as you are satisfied with the work that you've put into the book, with the respect that you've given the idea, I think that's really all we can ask of this gift that's been given to us. So yeah, just remember the joy. Remember why you started doing it in the first place.
Yeah, I love that. And then once they are ready, I think that this is fascinating, and this is something that you were talking about earlier about having to send physical copies from the Philippines to New York, which is wild to me. But you, I mean, you've a Sunday Times and USA Today bestseller. You live in Manila, and you said you're happy if your journey encourages other Filipino writers to reach an international audience. So I'm just curious, what do you think is both easier and more difficult about being so distant from that, like, UK New York hub of publishing?
Well, you have to be prepared to live in several time zones.
Yeah.
Half the time I don't know what time it is because like right now it's 10 p.m. and I'm talking to you, right?
Yep, and it's 8 a.m. here.
a lot of my emails come in at night. This isn't even the worst time for me to have a podcast recording because like I did one for Barnes and Noble, I think was that last week, and that was like at 3 a.m.
Oh my God.
So the time zone is a bit of a challenge, but also I do enjoy being a day ahead because I feel like psychologically I can hit my deadlines because at least I have a day buffer before my editor gets to work and I have to send my manuscript over. So I feel like, yes, okay, I am living in the future and I will always make it on time. So it's a plus and a plus and a minus sometimes because yeah, I some yeah, sleep you'll have to say goodbye to a regular sleep schedule, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
Excellent. All right. So while we start wrapping up on the questions, I'm curious, when you look at a book like The Elsewhere Express, what is the serious or true thing that you are secretly hoping it does to people who read it?
Oh gosh. Well, as I said, the people that I had in mind when I wrote the book were really my kids. I think they're at that stage in their lives where they're trying to figure out their why, why, what their purpose is, what they want to do with the rest of their lives. And I feel like it's easy to for me to say, yeah, you'll figure that out. I stumbled into this career, things will work out, and it's easier for me to say because I have the benefit of hindsight. I can tell them, oh, okay, you're gonna take some detours, but you'll eventually wind up where you're supposed to be. And I feel that we've had this discussion so many times. Like, this book was born from all the calls that I had from them from college, them calling me because and having all these like, oh, should I shift courses? What should I do? Things like that. And I feel like this was like almost. I wrote this book as an answer key for them.
Oh, I love that.
Read this. Maybe it will give you clarity, that things will work out. Things
Yeah.
will work out. You have to trust the process. You will find your way eventually, and there's no rush to find your purpose, like right this very minute. Like, I've taken so many detours, and if not for those detours, I wouldn't be where I am, having the privilege of writing these stories. So I just feel like allow yourself to get lost, and you'll find your way. You'll find
Yeah.
your way.
Yeah. That's perfect advice for anyone, including writers out there. Well, as a final question, I'm just curious, what's next for you? Do you have another project that you're working on or anything?
Well, I actually just sent my the book that's coming out after the Elsewhere Express in 2027. I just sent it to my editors. So that's called The Night Movers Disappearing Service. Another strange
Perfect.
book.
We love strange.
Yeah, so
Excellent.
that's coming out in 2027, and I have another book coming out after that, but that's still in early stages of brainstorming strange ideas.
Yeah. Well, Sam, it has been a delight talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure.
All right. So, Sam filled her time waiting on her kid by writing in a coffee shop. So, I want to know, what is your strangest place or circumstance that you've had to find a routine to write?
I've written pretty much everywhere because I'll do it on my
Same.
phone. So like I've done like the line at the grocery store, pumping gas. Yeah, the phone was a game changer. You know,
I mean, because of the van, I've written from all kinds of places with all kinds of views. I think I have written in restrooms. Does that count? I've written in
Sure.
men's rooms, especially in like airports.
Spray painting on the stall wall does not count.
Kevin, didn't you spend like a weekend writing a novel or something? So you had like your phone on you at like a hotel, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah. So I wrote a. There is a novel I wrote in a day because I was snowed in somewhere, but that was with a laptop. But I wrote by my count four of my novels on entirely on my iPhone with my thumbs, and the current
Poor thumbs.
my the it actually was not as bad as you think. But the book that is my giveaway on my website, if you sign up for my newsletter, I wrote while I was in line at Disney World for
That's
the
it.
flight of the Avatar or flight of the some whatever Avatar based ride that was. It's like a 4 hour wait in line, and I wrote a short story on my phone.
Gotta
So
get Easy
that
Pass.
may be the weirdest place now that I think about it.
Yeah. She also talked about, you know, putting heavier topics and adding in more like fantastical settings. Do you, since this is more cozy, do you guys find that similar in your genres? Like the heavier the subject, the more you lean into like fantastical or supernatural or something else?
I think you have to.
I'll lean into
Yeah.
humor. Mainly because I write a lot of, like dark, like serial killer type stuff. And I've gotten to know a lot of cops over the years, and they tend to really lean into the humor. So like the darker the crime scene, like the funnier the jokes, it's basically their coping mechanism. So I try to capture that.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. I think with thrillers, you have to include some humor. You need some comic relief from all of the blood and awfulness. And I think it's the same in horror as well. You know, having something a little bit light in places, because it's hard just to have one straight go of heavy for the whole thing without, I don't know, feeling depressed. And most people don't want to leave their fiction feeling depressed.
Unless you're like Cormac McCarthy.
True, true. I guess there are some cases where that doesn't happen. Yeah, I found that really interesting because, like, I know it's easy in fantastical things to just add more fantasy, but I was curious in, like, you know, thriller realm, and I think humor makes a lot of sense.
Humor.
I'm a big fan of the whole magical realism genre, but I think that in part I do that even when the point of it isn't the magic. You know, that I like the idea of the absurd or whatever intruding on the contemporary normal world. And like my thrillers have been almost exclusively that if I really dig down on it, because it's some usually some like misplaced history that's suddenly throwing the modern world into a state of danger. And you kind of got to stretch to get to that sometimes, so there's a that sort of absurdity there. But I definitely write a lot of humor into my protagonist because he's a wise ass. He's
He's
I think that
Kevin.
comes, yeah. He's a he could you could reasonably assume that he is at least somewhat Kevin. That's true.
Very nice. In terms of managing anxiety, Sam said that she outlines to help manage her anxiety. And so I'm curious, what steps in your process do you use to assure that this is a book worth finishing?
Bourbon.
I use medication, so
Oh, great. Perfect. Great, everybody. Bourbon and medication. That's the answer.
sometimes at the same time.
No.
No, this is not medical advice.
There we go. Now you can say it.
Also, my life is a horror story, so don't replicate what I do.
Yeah, I liked when she said that because I never really thought about it. Outlining reduces anxiety, but I think it does because you can see the book is going to work or not. So you're at least saving yourself from wasting a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, if you start the outline, you're like,
Well, that's a way to think of it I
this
hadn't
doesn't
thought
make any
about.
sense.
Yeah, the outlining caused all my anxiety. So it didn't relieve a speck of it for me. But using it as a kind of a litmus test to see if the story works is not a bad argument for outlining. So now I have
But
to reconsider everything.
when you're pantsing a novel and you don't know where it's going, that doesn't create any kind of anxiety for you?
Maybe briefly, but I guess because I've done this so often now that I know I'm going to come up with something, it doesn't really impact me. But outlining was different. I think the only reason outlining really stressed me out, honestly, and made me anxious was because it was something I didn't do, and because I wasn't good at it. And so I had there's a name for that when a student came through school and he was always the best at something. Now he has to perform in the real world. That's basically what I go through when I have to try something new.
Perfect. She also said, don't write to get published, write a good story and let publishing be the effect. What are your thoughts on that one?
I 100% agree with that.
I like
I
money.
mean, I think, yeah, well, I think it's true with everything in life. You can't worry about what you can't control. You can't control, well, I mean, I guess if you're self-publishing, you can control some of it. If you're
Some of
traditionally
it.
published, not as much. You can't control, you know, whether people like your book or not. So I think what you can control is getting the words on the page, finishing the story, trying to get it out there, and then moving on to the next book because you can't control, you know, a ton of what's going to happen there. I mean, you can and you can't.
You've got to write what you want to write. Like I had a conversation with one of my foreign publishers, and they wanted me to create a new serial killer series. And like my 4MK series does really well. So I told them, no, I'm going to write three prequels to that. And they're like, no, don't do that because that's the same series. Like we need a brand new series. So I wrote the three prequels anyway, and they love them. So like this is a couple of years later, but like you just got to do what you want to do because there's so many different voices out there. Everybody, has thinks they know what's right, but ultimately you're the only person who can decide that for yourself.
You have to write what's going to make you feel fulfilled. But JD, I think I would argue that you actually did write an entirely different because your first series.
Oh, I did. Yeah, no, you're there. There's that too. I mean, we had that conversation. Like, this is still, even though they're prequels, even though it's the same characters, it's a
That's
different
right.
point in time, and I'm telling a very different story about, basically the birth of a serial killer.
Because the original books were all written with a character who'd already experienced all those things. And so you're starting from the middle, basically. So,
Yeah, because my serial killer is basically dead at the beginning of the first book.
I wonder, like, for me, this
Spoilers, by the
concept.
way.
Well,
I
you
think
see
it's
it
on
on
it's on
page
the cover.
one. It's not that much of a spoiler.
But I wonder too if this is kind of like an evolutionary thing, at least for me in my experience, because like I think at first you want to write for yourself, not to get published. And then you start to see what it is that you like that is publishable and how to refine that and really get the attention. Because at least for me, like I'm thinking about how people are responding to the previous books to ensure that it hooks people more and more. And it's not just like what I want to do, but I make sure that it's what I want to do that will pull people in.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like if you're reading your reviews, like that's the best place to probably figure that kind of stuff out.
Depending on your goal, right? Okay. So, because if you are writing, and I think that there is something you said, especially in the current age of AI and the deluge of work that's hitting, out there, and we all complain that it's hard to be discovered. I think why not just embrace the low chance? Right? Like embrace the fact that you might not get the kind of notice you're after, and just go write something new and original. I posted on social media the other day that, and I'll try to sum this up in, because I can't remember my exact wording, but I think it's interesting. Everyone's worried in the creative world, artists and writers and everybody else, we're all worried that AI is like stealing the work from us and taking over for us. And I think that what we should probably consider is we have become so formulaic and it's so predictable in the way that we tell stories or create art that is easily replicable by AI. So maybe we should just take this as an opportunity to really push the limits of this stuff and really come up with something new and hyper creative. And that may mean that you're not making a bunch of money from it. So I'm not an advocate for people to just go out and just do something and not try to make a living off of it. But I do think that we're kind of at a point where experimentation may be your strength. This may be the opportunity to go out and do something really bold,
Be weird.
be
Be weird.
weird.
I love it. All right, last question. She admitted that even after 14 years, she still struggles to call herself a real author. Anyone here still struggle with imposter syndrome, and what moments made it feel less impostery?
That never goes away. I mean, I know so many big name authors at this point, and they all tell me they still have it. Like the only thing you could do is go back and just read something that you just wrote, and then hopefully it's going to clue you into the fact that you know what you're actually doing.
Yeah. Like small wins help. It's such a weird game. I call it is kind of like a game because you sit there and then nothing is happening forever, and then something happens, and then nothing happens for a long stretch again, and then so that helps. Beta readers help. I love my beta readers. They give me such lovely comments, like, "Oh, I love this, and this is great." So
Yeah.
maybe I need to start reading my 5-star reviews, like Sam. Maybe I'll just
Yeah.
filter for only 5-star reviews.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I do read the negative ones, but I get so few.
You gotta read them
But
all.
maybe when you're not fragile, you can read them all.
Yeah.
But when you're
Right.
feeling fragile, just filter for your 5-star reviews.
There is a philosophy or an idea that you could potentially use imposter syndrome as your excuse to continue creating and fighting for it basically. It's kind of a component of being an artist or being a creative. We're constantly in battle against our own self-imposed limitations. We're always kind of down on ourselves because we know we're not quite hitting the mark of what we were trying to create. Nobody gets that perfect. Like if I were a painter, I would always be irritated by the fact that what I'm putting on the canvas is not exactly what I had in mind. And I do that with my writing all the time. There's art. I read something. I just finished reading Theo of Golden, and I'm like, I've wasted my life. I am a terrible writer. I am not doing what I set out to do. So I felt like an imposter. But what it's done is retool me and made and forced me to dive headlong into trying to improve. And I think that's what the purpose of it is. As miserable as it makes us feel, it serves a purpose, and we might as well embrace it and run with it.
And that's when you start the heavy drinking, right? Like after that.
That's the right
Great.
now, all of this is the bourbon talking, frankly.
Great. Great. Love it.
Awesome. Oh, okay. With that, JD, who's up next week?
I'm reading this and I'm thinking I've been in this industry for a very long time. I know a ton of writers and there's literally like in speaking to all of them over the years, there's no right or wrong way to write a book. But when it comes to the tools that you can use, some are far better than others. Next week we've got Oliver Evanson coming on from Scrivener. Scrivener has been one of the go-to writing softwares for many of us, and it's about to get way better. Oliver is going to explain exactly what's coming next to this industry-leading software.
Nice. Sounds great. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.